have a special guest on the phone, and we have a special guest in the studio, and we have you on the phones. Don't worry, we will get to you. Don't give up and don't hang up. Joining us in studio right now is David Honig. He's the chief counsel of Florida's NAACP. He's also president of the Minority Telecommunications Council. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for waking up early. It's not that early if you were in Florida. It would be 8:20.
8:20. Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you were up on California time. You know, I know that the NAACP in Florida is obviously involved with the Trayvon Martin case. And there's been a lot of talk about how, you know, the feds really may not have a case because there may not be provable civil rights or hate crime violations here. What's your take on that?
There's a civil rights case both as a criminal matter and as a civil matter. The case needs to be criminally prosecuted. On March 12th, we wrote to the Attorney General and asked that the Justice Department investigate the case, send the Community Relations Service down. In 10 minutes after they got that request, they called and granted it. They had feet in the ground the next day. I think that's encouraging because it reminds us of why we elected this president, because he used to be a civil rights lawyer, and he was superb, and his administration was superb in reacting to this the right way and very fast. But we also asked that this police chief be fired. Yesterday, he temporarily resigned. I think that's probably going to be permanent. Because, my goodness, how can you have someone confessing right on the spot, standing over the body, and not even do a toxicology test, not do a drug test? Just let the person go. They don't know. We're not even sure they know where he is. So the third thing we wanted, and we really need the community to support the NAACP on this, is to get this in front of a grand jury and let the grand jury use the opportunity to indict the shooter and let justice prevail if a crime occurred.
Now, there is a local person here who has a radio show, not on this station, who says, and there are others that take this position, that this is not a criminal matter, but apparently you vehemently disagree.
Oh, yes, it's a criminal matter.
Why? What's your justification for saying that?
Much of
Aside from the fact that there's a homicide.
There's an urban legend that says that this Florida stand your ground law allows a person to say, well, it was in self-defense, and then you have to have no reasonable doubt, which, and there was no one there except the two people, and there are some telephone calls, so it'd be too hard to prosecute. No, it's not. Stand your ground is a horrible law, but it's not really relevant here. In fact, the House sponsor of the bill said nothing in that law authorizes you to pursue and confront. Mr. Zimmerman pursued the person who he was looking at as being suspicious basically because of his race, and almost hunted him down. You can't confront someone and be the aggressor and jump out of your truck with a gun and then say, oh, I shot him in self-defense, even under that law. So there really, it's the, whether you can win, you never know. But certainly it's the sort of thing that routinely should be prosecuted, and it's just astounding that you wouldn't have a prosecution here. I really thought when this arrived on my desk that I was back in the 1950s and it was a lynching. And they just let the person go. I thought those days were over. They're not.
Let's go to James from Torrance. Good morning, James. Wait a minute. Before we do that, I have a special guest on the phone. He is actually a member of a group that I'm now a member of called the Black Media Alliance. It's pushing for less racism and sexism on the air. Hopefully we'll one day get to none, and more diversity of hiring in a particular super large media chain. He's also Judge Kevin Ross on TV. Good morning, Kevin Ross. Thanks for checking in. Mr. Ross, are you there? Okay, let's get ourselves together here technically. Let's try that again. Kevin Ross, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
See that? Call me MacGyver. How are you?
I am great, Dominique. Thank you so much for having me here on Front Page.
Well, it's great to have you on, and it's been interesting because we've been talking about Trayvon Martin concurrently with the issues that we're fighting in media, and you know, because I think a lot of us feel like what happens on the air can create an environment. Certainly Alex Nogales from the Hispanic Media Coalition made that point in front of the city council as all of us went before the LA City Council the other day. You want to talk about that?
Well, you know, I've actually been following this Trayvon Martin case, and you know, before I had an opportunity to be the judge in America's Court, which is actually in Los Angeles here on KKL, in fact, it's going to be on this morning at 9 o'clock, I was a prosecutor here in Los Angeles for 8 years, and then I was a member of the Los Angeles judiciary for 7 years. And the thing that I'm finding fascinating about how this whole conversation about Trayvon Martin and free speech and how they intersect is when you're a prosecutor, part of your role is to actually file cases as well as try them in a court of law. And in many instances, I would have situations where there were dictates that said, oh, no, you cannot reject this case. This case needs to be filed. And the fact of the matter is oftentimes as a prosecutor, you want to win. And the standard is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And yet there are some circumstances that are so important and send a bigger message that even when you felt as though what they would consider to be a dog case, depending on who the prosecutor was, you certainly had the mindset of, you know, we need to try this case anyway. And that's why, how I'm looking at this Trayvon Martin case. David made an excellent point about the stand your ground laws, but just based on the facts that you can say, can you prove this beyond a reasonable doubt? When you look at the 911 call, when you look at George Zimmerman appearing to approach this young man and the eyewitnesses and the circumstantial evidence, I think a prosecutor will certainly be able to build a strong case to present to a jury. Now, I think the question becomes...
A criminal case.
Right, a criminal case. And see, oftentimes what people don't recognize is, you know, I handle small claims cases in a courtroom on television. But many instances when people file civil cases, that's just part of the process because then you've got to get that judgment. So if you look at someone like a George Zimmerman, does he have any sort of financial assets that can be attacked in a civil matter? And when you have a criminal conviction, it makes that civil case even stronger.
Well, apparently he has a gun in a car, Kevin.
I'm sorry, say it again?
I said apparently he has a gun in a car.
No, I'm saying from a standpoint...
Are those assets? Can we take those?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the reality is this family is going to try to, which I can't even fathom, you know, being the father of two boys, but they're going to try to have, make the argument that there's some sort of financial amount that could possibly, which we know that that's impossible, but that could possibly compensate them. And for me, that would be in the millions. I don't get the sense that George Zimmerman has those sorts of assets available.
No.
So now you start looking at, can the homeowners association be sued for allowing him to engage in this sort of vigilante activism? Can the city, that attorney, which for me was great to see an African-American attorney actually representing the family. And when Najee Ali was organizing the protest in Leimert Park yesterday, I told Najee, make sure you get that point across. It's great for all of us to be enraged. The reality is that when you have oftentimes people of color as cops, as probation officers, as judges, as prosecutors, we get to play a role in the actual seeing through of justice. And the fact of the matter is there are so many people of color who would make phenomenal lawyers.
And we do see things differently. We have a different perspective because we're living a different life. And that's our whole point, not our whole point, but a big part of our point about what's going on the airways, really nationally, when you look at the talk radio landscape. It's very slanted toward a very far-right conservative agenda. It's very slanted toward hate-mongering, toward women, toward Latinos, toward African Americans, toward Asians. And that creates an environment which makes it easier for a Trayvon Martin incident to occur. David, do you want to weigh in on that? David Honig.
It's very hard to pin a particular crime on a particular host that someone heard, and then they said, go do this. Speech in huge volumes creates creates the kindling that sometimes lights itself up as hate crimes. The basic premise of broadcasting is that advertising works because a message is conveyed, is repeated, is emphasized, and people go buy the product. If the product is hate, then it's not surprising that you'd get a spike in hate crimes. The FBI does an annual report on hate crimes, and the 2010, when the last one, I think, is very troubling. There were 3,725 racial hate crimes reported that year, probably about three times that many for real. That many, nationwide. Know what percentage of those were against African Americans? 70%.
It's stunning.
Why?
Not stunning,
African-Americans?
But stunning. Yeah.
I wish someone would explain. It's stunning to me.
Well, I think we have a lot of people probably on the phone that could explain it to you. Kevin, do you want to stay on the phone with us?
You know, I just want to check in and say thank you for your work in this whole public media conversation, because something that you said, being a mother, you know, it's when I'm a father, so I know how I would feel with a son. But when you said something about being a mother and that perspective needing to be heard, I think that for me that left an impression, because women really have a different mindset on issues like this, and I think it just needs to be important that we have more diversity on those airwaves. So I join you in that fight, and I support you and the Black Media Alliance in every respect.
Well, Kevin, I know you got to get to work, but tell us again when we find your show.
So it's America's Court with Judge Ross, KCAL 9 here in Los Angeles on Channel 9 at 9 a.m. And please like us on Facebook. I check in from time to time. And we're also on Twitter at America's Court. We're nationally syndicated. And you can also catch us on Netflix. And I'm working with Byron Allen over at Entertainment Studios, an African-American gentleman who's doing a lot of good things in the community as it relates to hiring folks. And so it's just, we're having a great time. And you're going to have to come down sometime and check us out. Maybe.
Definitely. Byron Allen is, I call him the real Tyler Perry, because he's a mogul that no one knows about.
And he's stealth. That's the thing about
doing
it. Sometimes you got to stay below the radar.
I don't know how he does it. Well, I hope you don't stay behind the radar. We will check you out on TV today, KCAL 9, 9 o'clock.
All right. You guys have a great day.
All right. Good to talk with you, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to hit these phones, and let's go to Karen from Los Angeles. Good morning, Karen. You're on the radio. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, Karen.
Yes. Hi. My problem is why nobody is saying that it could not be self-defense. He had no weapon. I haven't heard that said at all, that he had no weapon. How could it be self-defense against a big,
yeah, right,
man?
You've got a 240-pound man against a 160-pound child. And,
okay.
And also the man was in his car when he called the police, so he could have just driven away. I mean, how is it self-defense when you follow someone? I think, David Honig, I think you were making that point.
Yeah. Okay, and repeatedly talking about whether or not it's a hate crime or not, it was murder.
Yeah,
that's a murder.
Well, you, Karen,
period.
The reason we talk about repeatedly whether it's a hate crime is because murder, if it's a hate crime, it's an enhanced prosecution, right?
Think about why it is that cancer for many people is so much more fearful than, say, dying in an auto accident or falling out of a building and so forth. It's because cancer's inherent cruelty is that there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing in your lifestyle. It just happens. You can't control it. You're at their will.
Well,
so why if an airplane crashes so horrible? Because you can't do anything about
it. Analogy.
And the reason hate crimes are so terrifying is they happen to you because of something that you were born with that you can't and wouldn't want to change, or because of something you believe. And nothing that you do can eliminate that inherent risk. And when it can happen to you, even in a gated community, when you're walking home as a child with Skittles in your pocket, then the question is, are you safe? What makes hate crimes terrifying is the fact that it removes from us the feeling that all of us have to have in society, that at some level, we're safe. that we can wake up in the morning knowing we're safe and go to sleep knowing we're safe. Imagine not being able to do that, and it's your child. That's why it's so frightening. That's why we prosecute them stronger than we would just another murder.
But I think the reason people are arguing about whether or not there was a racial slur on the 911 tape, which some have definitively reported as true and some are saying it's not clear, is because of that enhanced... I mean, there is... That's the federal hate crime statute, you know, and we have them locally as well, which add to the amount of time a person would do and the severity of the punishment, right?
Yes.
Let's go to R.W. from Victorville. Good morning, R.W. Good to hear from you.
It's definitely clear.
R.W., you're on the air.
Yes, talk to me. Thank you, Dominique. Good morning, Front Page family. It's just, I've been listening at this case go on and on and on. But looking at that Florida law standby man in there, he's a self-appointed neighborhood watchman. Also, so he's not in an organized situation. I'm trying to find out, where does the use of deadly force come in at? Okay. I mean, I've seen, you know, many neighborhood, I've been in park neighborhood watch programs before, but I never had it where we had authorization to use of deadly force. Okay, all during the 911 tape, we see this man being pursued. What happened to observe and report until the law officials get there? This man clearly took matters in his own hand. He disobeyed a lawful order. He was never picked up or questioned, which is normal procedure for any kind of homicide, let alone whatever position he called himself trying to be.
All of the things that you're saying are true, R.W. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. There's nothing inherently
Hold on one second, R.W. Go ahead.
There's nothing inherently wrong with the concept of a neighborhood watch. And keep in mind, it's called neighborhood watch. It is not neighborhood militia. The two main premises of it, this is neighbors watching out for them, for each other. No guns, no pursuit. It's not someone saying they're a neighborhood watch captain with a gun pursuing someone and saying, well, it was self-defense. That has nothing to do with what neighborhood watch is.
Well, and
really
the
about.
Other thing is, I mean, this Neighborhood Watch Association said this guy wasn't even part of it. So that's another, you know, that's another question mark. R.W., everything you listed was true, but what's your bottom line?
My bottom line is that we got to stand up for justice in regards, because like they said, so many of these things go unreported. And people look at, you know, they are, this is just a racial, now this is a racial hate crime trying to disguise up under the law, and it needs to be stopped. And we got to keep a stand to it.
Thank you, R.W.
Yes.
Good to hear from you. Don't be a stranger. Darlie from Hollywood, good morning. Darlie, you're radio free on 102.3 KJLH.
Good morning, Dominique. Tall, tall, I've been Front Page family. I have something to say about the Trayvon case. You know, I feel like someone had to have seen something. I swear, like someone had to be somebody driving by the other day. I'm walking down the street with some high heels on. I trip over a curb. Someone immediately says, "Are you okay?" They're getting in their car. And I'm thinking, you know, where was the person, you know, driving around?
Well, we have numerous 911, but Darlie, we have numerous calls to 911. We have the little kid who saw, you know, Trayvon down from a distance outside. Mm-hmm. We have the girlfriend on the telephone. I mean, it's a lot of witnesses in this case.
Like, what more do they need? Like you said, do they need a reality TV show of the event? Like, okay, so I signed the petition,
and
the color
maybe,
of paint, and
you know,
I sent the...
maybe Jesus, Muhammad, you know? I mean, what is it?
Right.
Doesn't it seem like an avalanche of evidence?
And there needs to be, because the standard to convict someone of a crime is that there's no reasonable doubt.
Standard to arrest
that's
a person
correct,
for a crime.
That's correct. But prosecutors make a decision to prosecute based on whether they think they can get a conviction. In this case, I think Judge Ross was absolutely right. There is way more than enough evidence here to get a conviction. The prosecutors haven't announced whether they're going to pursue it, but they certainly should. The Florida prosecutors are pretty good at what they do. They put people in jail all the time for murder. They can do this too.
It is 5:38 in the morning, Radio Free Friday. More of your phone calls coming up. More with David Honig. He's the chief counsel of Florida's NAACP, and also, coincidentally, the president of the Minority Telecommunications Council. Oh, yeah, all that is on the agenda. It's the Front Page, Total Talk Expression, Radio Free, 102.3 KJLH.
It's time to get up.
Get down.
It's the Front Page.
The Front Page.
Front Page.
On Radio Free.
102.3. KJLH. It's Radio Free Friday on the Front Page. Call now and bring the heat. Call 520-KJLH.
Radio Free 102.3 KJLH returning to your phone calls and more conversation with David Honig, the chief counsel of Florida's NAACP and president of the Minority Telecommunications Council, in just a moment. And I want to ask you, David Honig, how significant is this, the stepping aside of the police chief and then these investigators? And what is prompting it? Is it public pressure?
It's no question it's public pressure. In fact, there was a 3-2 vote of no confidence by the city council. That would never have happened if noise had not been made, if people had not spoken up. And my goodness, when there's a drunk driving case and someone hits a utility pole and no one is hurt, automatically, the first thing you do a test to see, was the person drunk? Was there alcohol in their system? Were there drugs in their system? You get, if there's a person that's hurt, you get evidence. If there's someone laying in the grass, you get scrapings. If there was a fight, you get stuff that you put in evidence bags, because otherwise it'll be lost. Well, apparently, very little or none of that was done in this case of a murder where the person was literally standing over the body, blood everywhere, with a gun, admitting to it. They didn't do that. This is just unthinkable. Of course he has to resign.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, you know, you could say it's sloppy, but it really feels like a cover-up. It really smacks of Old South.
There are some who just say, well, it's gross negligence, it's gross incompetence, but people are held to the standard of care of their profession. This was someone who was an experienced, for years, law enforcement supervisor, who certainly knows very well what the minimum standard is. And this was so far below it that you have to think that they just waved it off and said, this wasn't a murder that we would consider to be a murder. We'll just let it go. We trust this guy, and that's it. And so was it a cover-up? Probably. I don't know what was in the man's heart, but at the end of the day, it kind of looks like it was
a
cover-up.
Well, it's just crazy because they looked at his record, and then he has assault on an officer, and most of the time they're going to run your record. They run your record when they pull you over for a traffic ticket. And that's what seems really strange to me, because usually cops don't really appreciate people that jump cops.
Yeah. You'd think that if there was a case where they would be most anxious to arrest someone, it would be someone who has beaten up a cop. To let even that person go is just inexplicable. You can't explain it other than maybe they, because it's more than just gross negligence. I think it was probably a part of a cover-up.
Very, very weird. And we have a lot of phone calls for you. I want to ask you, everyone wants to talk about Trayvon Martin, and rightly so, but we at the Black Media Alliance have been on a mission to find some balance, to find some diversity of voices and some clear standards about, not from the level of censorship, but from the level of, what does your employee handbook say? What are your company standards? What are our community standards? Of course, that's an FCC question. We took it to the city council, our call for Los Angeles radio stations, a notably Clear Channel, to stop sexist and racist hate talk on the air. And some people say we shouldn't have done that. The city council has no business intervening in this kind of a case. How do you look at that?
City councils represent people who elect them. And they speak on important issues of the day. And certainly they've issued resolutions praising radio stations for good things that they've done. And no one says, well, that's not their business. Of course it's their business. Now, what they can't do is something that coerces speech or tries to restrain speech or prefer one kind of speech over another with the force of government power. But the resolution doesn't do that. It simply expresses their views as representatives of the people who elected them. Advisory only. There's nothing wrong with that resolution. It's a perfectly good resolution, and frankly, I think I was surprised anyone voted against it. I think the stations that to whom it was apparently directed ought to take it to heart, and I hope that they have. I think they probably have. It was worded, I think, very carefully to avoid even the appearance of censorship. I think the city council needs to be commended.
5:50 in the morning. We're going to take as many calls as we can before we pass the mic to Steve Harvey, because he is up next. Ricky from Compton, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Dominique.
What's on your mind today?
You know, it's amazing how this thing has been put with such a spin on it to me. If you look at things that have happened, this guy left his home to go track this guy as he would, you say, was suspicious, right?
Yes.
Okay. I can't leave my home with my gun to come to you and rescue you and fire and kill a man and not be arrested. I mean, you know, it's premeditated is what I'm looking at. You got in the car from your home. You went riding with your gun to go see what's up. And then when you get there, you fire a shot off at someone. That's premeditated, you know. We're looking at this thing from a totally different angle.
Okay, well, since we're tight on time, Ricky, let's have David respond to what you're saying, and thank you for your call.
We don't know whether Mr. Zimmerman left his house saying, I'm going to find this specific person, Trayvon Martin, and kill him. Or whether he left saying, I'm going to find some black person and kill him. Or whether he said, I'm going to leave the house kind of with recklessly indifferent to whether I kill someone that I'm going to find or may find. He'd apparently been out there before.
If he went out of the house, like in the case of James Craig Anderson, you know, the three, they were teens at the time, pleading guilty on yesterday to that murder, and they will have the hate crimes enhancement, so they're looking at life. It reminds me a little bit of that. If they went out of the house and said, we're going to find us an N-word, isn't that premeditation?
That would be for without necessarily attacking that particular one, but yes. The thing is, that's going to be very hard to prove. What is not hard to prove is that this was an unprovoked, well, not hard. Everything is hard in the courtroom, but I think it's certainly provable, and it's proven every day in courtrooms, that this was a person who acted with kind of corrupt, immoral intent, the kind of thing that you want to be able to punish with an enhancement. If you were to ask me kind of how should it be charged, you don't want to overcharge or undercharge offenses, it's probably second-degree murder.
Molly Bell, City of Compton. I know you hate it when I rush you, but it's 5:53, Queen.
Reparations in memory of our ancestors. Good morning to you, Dominique, your staff. Good morning, David Haneke, the Front Page family. Special good morning to Steve, B-Love himself, Stevie Wonder. Thank Najee Ali and UKJLH for all that took part in the solidarity rally at Trayvon Martin, for Trayvon Martin at Leimert Park. My question to you, and I'll listen to your comments off the air, David Haneke, is that racial profiling is still alive. Like we still had the town passes in South Africa, still alive. Going back to the days of freedom passes during slavery, still alive. My question to you is, we as black people, we don't racial profile. Because if we did, white men who drive through our community would be stopped. They are statistically the pedophiles, the molesters, and the serial killers. Listen to your comments off the air. All you prayer warriors, keep fasting and praying, because the struggle continues. But always, to God be the glory. Thank you, Dominique.
Thank you, Molly Bell. Do you have any comment on what Molly Bell said?
Certainly, I'm thinking of the neighborhood I grew up in. It was very uncommon back in the day to find white men in the neighborhood I lived in, unless they were there to try to buy drugs, or they were police officers trying to find someone to beat up, or a landlord collecting rent, or trying to find prostitutes. There were very few people who were there because they were trying to perform community service or work in the food bank. Teachers would tend not to stay in the neighborhood after school closed. I don't know whether things have changed in really, really depressed neighborhoods or not in that respect. But I can certainly see how someone who lives in such a neighborhood would be suspicious of a lot of white men driving around at night in their pickup truck, you know, given that history.
Okay, let's go to Mary from Compton. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, and thank you so much to your guest for answering the question that I had about the City Council making the resolution. The station that we're dealing with, KFI, they do not. I do not hear a change in KFI. It's the sister station. There's still a problem on that station, and if you call that station, you don't get, as black people, we don't get to give our comments like we do on this station. And I'm
well,
so
we want
glad
you to keep listening to this station, Mary.
Well,
that's
we
what,
do.
That's what we really want.
Well, I do.
We don't need sensitivity training and city council resolutions.
I don't listen to the other station, but my point is, the sister station, I do, and I appreciate what they've been doing, but still,
but that's KFI only, that's, hey,
has
that's only going
to change.
But Mary, that's only going on for 3 weeks, so appreciate it fast.
I'm appreciating it fast, but still, KFI has still not changed their policy.
All right, Mary.
And that's what needs to be dealt with.
I know this, you know, this is not a Florida matter, but it kind of is, because Rush Limbaugh is broadcast all over the country, and the issue of hate speech and the far right wing bent of talk radio nationally, the exclusion of women, the exclusion of people of color, which I feel slants our democracy, that's a national issue. What's your comment?
And it's funny because people who like Rush Limbaugh, their answer to that is, well, but liberals control all the other media. But they really don't.
According to,
if you look at who's in the morning talk shows on Sunday morning on...
You mean Rupert Murdoch, that liberal?
It's it just isn't true. And the reason is sort of structural. It's in a commercial-driven media, those with wealth always have an advantage. Now, there's a 20-to-1 racial wealth gap, inherited, of course, over generations, affecting African Americans. 18-to-1 wealth gap for Latinos. 20% wage disparity. 16% unemployment. White unemployment is about 7.5%. So with those markers of lack of wealth, it's kind of no wonder that there isn't access to the instruments of power, which include the mass media.
5:57, wow, we're going to have to get a really short version of a comment. Eugene's been holding on for a long time, so I'm going to him. Eugene, you're on.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. I need it short, though. I appreciate your patience, but we're almost at the end of the road here.
Yeah, I'd like to thank you. I was at the rally yesterday, and I was just saying, I have a 17-year-old, and now, okay, that was nice that we had the rally and we have marches. Now we need to have constructive, positive action. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, that was really short. Thank you, Eugene. Yeah, what follows a rally? What follows the protest? What follows the news stories? It seems like sometimes these things just sort of fade to black, pardon the expression, and then, you know, we don't hear anything else about it.
Well, look at the time period between 1955, Montgomery bus boycott, and 1964, the passage of the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act in 1968, the Voting Rights Act in 65. What happened during that period? There was a movement. There wasn't just one rally, everyone at home and hit a key for change.org. That's great to do, but we're going to need more rallies. We're going to need more people to mobilize. We're going to need people to get on buses and go to Florida and go to Washington. There's another rally in Sanford, Florida, maybe too far to come from Los Angeles, but it's March 31st. And we're going to have more to keep the pressure on, because as soon as people think that no one cares, no one will act as though they should care.
And then it drops out of the news cycle, and then we move on. David, is there a website or information where people can reach you if they are interested in contacting you, finding out more about what they can do to help the NAACP?
That is the site for the national organization, and of course it has material about the Trayvon Martin case. The organization I run, the Minority Media and Telecom Council, is mmtconline.org, and we are focused on civil rights in the media and telecom industries.
And we'll have those posted on kjlhradio.com.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For getting up early and hanging with us. Thanks, Jazz Mechanic, as well, for your great work. And she's tired.
Yeah.
Okay, as she should be. The March for Trayvon Martin Is going to be, there's one Sunday actually at 2 o'clock on Crenshaw Exposition. There's one in Hollywood this weekend as well. You can, wow. We'll have that stuff up. We'll find it, we'll post it. DominiqueDePrima.com. We got to go. Steve Harvey's got a radio show. And I'm going to take us back once again, because whenever we get in these hard struggles, got to remember, I like to take the words of Jim Brown from his AmeriCan curriculum. Let's take a deep breath in and let us release. Today, let me remember, success is a journey and not a destination. Till next time, Radio Free Family, be well. One love.